If your credit card bills have gotten out of hand, call Consolidated Credit now. If you're making the minimum payments, but your balance is just not going down, call Consolidated Credit now. If the interest rates on your credit cards are so high, it will take years to get out of debt, call Consolidated Credit now. They've helped over 5 million people. They can consolidate your debts into one lower payment, reduce your interest rates, and get you out of debt fast. If you're struggling with credit card debt, call Consolidated Credit now.
Call now, 800-350-3241. That's 800-350-3241. 800-350-3241.
Consolidated Credit Counseling Services Incorporated, 5701 West Sunrise Boulevard, Fort Lauderdale, Florida, 33313. Not a loan company licensed by the New York Department of Financial Services and by the Vermont Department of Financial Regulation. Maryland DM19, Oregon DM80031. Licensed by Virginia State Corporation. Commission license number DC32. Establishment of a plan may adversely affect the individual's credit rating or credit scores. Non-payment of debt may lead creditors to increase financial charges or collections activity, including litigation.
From the campus of Yale University, this is Business Talk with Jim Campbell, nationally syndicated across the country on the Biz Talk Radio Network and coming to you from our flagship stations, Yale Radio WYBC and 1490 AM WGCH Greenwich. All talk and all business, 60 minutes of radio with leading figures from the world of business along with the business of politics and sports. A reassessment of the presidency of Jimmy Carter with his chief White House domestic advisor. Rather than a failed presidency, was Carter one of the best one-term presidents in American history to go along with being the consensus best ex-president in history? That's tonight on Business Talk with Jim Campbell. Stuart Eisenstadt was President Jimmy Carter's chief White House domestic advisor. He served President Clinton as U.S. ambassador to the European Union, Under Secretary of Commerce, Under Secretary of State, Deputy Secretary of Treasury. And under President Obama, he was Special Representative of the Secretary of State on Holocaust-era issues, now an international lawyer in Washington, D.C. An epic book he's just written, President Carter, The White House Years. Welcome, Stu.
Jim, thank you very much.
Honor to have you. And I have to admit, I was a registered Republican, and I voted for Jimmy Carter. And 2 years after that election, nobody in America admitted they voted for him, but I did. I want to start off with something that to me is Carter's greatest oratory, and it was before the presidency.
At the end of a long campaign, I believe I know our people of this state as well as anyone could. Based on this knowledge of Georgians, North and South, rural and urban, liberal and conservative, I say to you quite frankly that the time for racial discrimination is over.
All right, Stu, first off, that may have gotten him elected on that Time cover. You can comment on that. My second part of that is, why didn't he ever match that when he was president?
So it's very interesting, Jim. I had worked in the Johnson White House, LBJ's White House, after Harvard Law School. And then when he decided not to run for re-election for Hubert Humphrey's presidential campaign, when he lost, I came back to Atlanta, clerked for a federal judge, and then met Jimmy Carter. And I became his policy director in the 1970 gubernatorial campaign. And what attracted me to him is exactly what you played, and that is I found here was a young former state senator running from a gnat-infested 500-person hamlet in southwest Georgia. And yet, he was very strongly in favor of civil rights. That was the initial attraction to me. He told me that he had grown up in a county, Sumter County, that was two-thirds black, that all of his playmates, but not schoolmates in the segregated South, were black, and that when he came back from the nuclear navy of Hammond Rickover to take over his family business in Plains, Georgia, the first thing he did, Jim, was run for County Board of Education in Sumter County, and the reason was he wanted to lift the education level of all people, and he was shocked to find that the black students, teenage students, Jim, were given seats for 4 and 5 year olds, that they had no books. And this ingrained in him a sense of the need to end discrimination. And he not only said that in his inaugural, he hung the portrait of Martin Luther King Jr. in the state capitol, hardly popular at the time, and he took that same commitment into the White House. He, a Southern president, appointed more African Americans and women, by the way, to federal judgeships and senior positions than all 38 presidents combined before him. He supported affirmative action for African Americans and for Hispanics and for women. So this was an abiding commitment of his, and it was what really attracted him to me at the very outset.
Did it bother you that he didn't seem to match that kind of visionary oratory when he was in D.C.?
But he did.
He did?
He did. He appointed more African Americans.
Oh, in substance-wise.
More women as president than all 38 presidents put together in the really tough Bakke Supreme Court case where
yes.
White applicant for a medical school in California contended there was reverse discrimination because of the affirmative action program for African Americans. He insisted that we support the affirmative action program. He supported minority set-asides for black contractors to get government jobs, giving them a boost. So he very much carried that with him. And even though we lost in a crushing re-election in 1980 to Ronald Reagan, his strongest base of support from start to finish were African Americans. They understood that he knew their plight. He had grown up among them. He saw the discrimination. And interestingly, Jim, even at the Naval Academy, and this is well documented, there was only one black midshipman, and he was harassed horribly. And that black midshipman has said, and I quote it in the book, that Jimmy Carter was the one who led the effort to end that harassment. So this was an abiding issue of his that he carried with him to the White House to the very last day in office.
Yeah, that's. I should say that the book, which is very long, 900 pages, really makes the point over and over how little we know about the substantive accomplishments. I have to tell you this story briefly. President Carter, outside of office, came to Greenwich and spoke in our church. Tom Watson had been his ambassador to the Soviet Union, got him there, it was packed. And at the end, he said, now, come on down and visit us. You know, I teach Sunday school. So we're driving to Florida. I tell my wife, well, he invited us. We're going to show up. We get to the church, and he's sitting in a pew on the right side by himself, and no one's talking to him before the service. So, of course, I obnoxiously go right up and said, you know, you invited us here, and I'm here. And he remembered the church that he had spoken in and how beautiful it was. So he's really got a human touch. My question, why are you writing this this now?
That's a very good question. And the reason is that I felt that over the decades, his political hero had been Harry Truman. He put his famous slogan, the buck stops here, in his Oval Office desk. Truman is now remembered more for his achievements than his failures. And while both left office highly unpopular, I thought it was important to put the presidency of Jimmy Carter in a more realistic light. And I do not ignore in my book, and that's why it's gotten great reviews in the New York Times and Washington Post and even the National Review, I don't ignore the problems we had.
Jim. Yeah, you're very honest.
Inexperience by himself and his Georgia Mafia interparty warfare, but those all obscured huge accomplishments. He passed almost 70% of all his major legislation, just under the percentage of the master of the Congress, LBJ, who was the first president I worked for. And so I wanted to write a book that would put his presidency in a full perspective, not ignoring these problems, not obscuring them, not whitewashing the problems, but putting the accomplishments in a very real text. And the authenticity of the book, the candidness of the book is based on over 5,000 pages of contemporaneous notes of every meeting I had in the White House, verbatim, over 350 interviews of all the people in the administration and outside the administration, Republicans, Democrats, conservatives, liberals, five times with he alone. And it gave me a unique view of President Carter, but I think of the presidency of itself, its sort of hothouse atmosphere in which you work. And so I really wanted to write a book that put the presidency in greater perspective that mentioned, and I hope we'll have a chance to discuss them, the very real and lasting accomplishments, both at home and abroad, notwithstanding the problems that we had.
Okay, I want to get to some of those challenges. But first, I want to say I've long felt this. Reagan gets a lot of credit for starting this boom that lasted for 20 years. I think perhaps Carter's greatest accomplishment and the person responsible for that boom was really Paul Volcker.
Yes, so let's look at the inflation issue, which was one of the, as I call it, four I's, along with inexperience and inter-party warfare in Iran, that did us in. We inherited, Jim, a decade-long inflation. It started with Nixon because of the oil embargo. He had imposed wage and price controls. It continued with Ford, who had the sort of infamous whip inflation now program with the win buttons. And it got worse in our administration, in part because of the Iranian Revolution that doubled the price of oil. We had the same problem that Nixon had with the Yom Kippur oil embargo. Oil prices quadrupled, gas lands, and so forth. So here's what Carter did. From the very outset, and this is a Democratic president, imagine, who would run against the Ford recession. And while we did propose and passed tax cuts to stimulate the economy, as early as April of 77, just 3 months after his inauguration, he gave the first of three major anti-inflation speeches. He appointed two anti-inflation czars, cut social spending to try to balance the budget, which made him unpopular with the liberal wing, had wage and price guidelines with procurement sanctions. Everything failed, and he said to us going into a re-election, he said, look, I have tried everything. Nothing has worked. I do not want my legacy to be double-digit inflation, even if it means my loss in 1980 to Reagan. And so I'm going to take the stiff medicine and appoint Paul Volcker as chairman of the Federal Reserve, knowing, because Volcker told him a very famous incident in the Oval Office that I described in the book. And what Volcker told him, Jim, was the only way we can deal with this decade-long embedded inflation and inflation psychology is tight money, higher interest rates, and higher unemployment.
And this is Business Talk with Jim Campbell, Biz Talk Radio Network, 350 stations around the country. Go to biztalkradio.com, find the station closest to you, listen over the internet, get our podcast. We'll be right back with Stu Eisenstadt.
We paid less for our Craftmatic today than we did 20 years ago.
If you're still searching for the perfect solution to a good night's sleep, call now for prices and free information on today's Craftmatic adjustable beds. And then decide when you see how little they cost. Rated number one by consumers nationwide on ConsumerAffairs.com. Craftmatic beds come in all mattress types, including cool gel memory foam for up to 50% less than today's leading memory foam brand. Enjoy temporary relief of low back pain, poor circulation, nighttime heartburn, mild arthritis. You'll sleep better in a Craftmatic adjustable bed. So if you're still searching for the perfect solution to a good night's sleep, call now for prices and information, and then decide when you see how little they cost. Discover Craftmatic for less, up to 50% less than today's leading memory foam brand.
Call 1-800-316-5271. That's 1-800-316-5271. 1-800-316-5271. Call now.
If you're over the age of 50 and considering buying an annuity in the next 60 days, I have some important news for you. Don't buy an annuity until you understand the pros and cons of annuities. A free book to help you maximize your retirement income from television host and three-time author Josh Melberg has been released. This book reveals little-known truths about annuity strategies in simple-to-understand terms. Grab a pen right now, because we are about to offer you this free book that unlocks the five little-known secrets we believe baby boomers and seniors should know before buying an annuity. Call 800-935-0752 now, and you'll receive a free copy of Josh Milberg's book, Next Gen Annuity Strategies Revealed. As a bonus, we'll also send you a copy of The Number One Mistakes Retirees Are Making with Their Investments Today, and a free DVD on how you can get up to 33% more income in retirement. Call 800-935-0752. That's 800-935-0752. Employees of J.D. Melberg Financial have the appropriate licenses for the products they offer.
Do you have an idea for an invention or new product? Do you think companies would be interested in your idea? Do you want to try to get a patent? Then call InventHelp now. InventHelp keeps your idea confidential and explains every step of the invention process. We create professional materials representing your idea and submit it to companies who are looking for new ideas. We have more than 9,000 companies who have agreed to review ideas in confidence. If a company shows interest in manufacturing your invention, we can negotiate on your behalf. We have helped over 10,000 clients receive patents. patents. We also offer services including 3D modeling and animation demonstrating your idea, prototyping services, and we use state-of-the-art technology to show InventHelp client ideas to additional companies. Join the thousands of people just like you who chose InventHelp to pursue their idea. We are experienced. We are working for you. We are InventHelp.
Call us for free information at 1-800-607-8945. That's 1-800-607-8945. Again, 1-800-607-8945.
If your credit card bills have gotten out of hand, call Consolidated Credit now. If you're making the minimum payments, but your balance is just not going down, call Consolidated Credit now. If the interest rates on your credit cards are so high, it will take years to get out of debt, call Consolidated Credit now. They've helped over 5 million people. They can consolidate your debts into one lower payment, reduce your interest rates, and get you out of debt fast. If you're struggling with credit card debt, call Consolidated Credit now.
Call now, 800-350-3241. That's 800-350-3241. 800-350-3241.
Consolidated Credit Counseling Services Incorporated, 5701 West Sunrise Boulevard, Fort Lauderdale, Florida, 33313. Not a loan company licensed by the New York Department of Financial Services and by the Vermont Department of Financial Regulation. Maryland DM-19, Oregon DM-80031. Licensed by Virginia State Corporation. Commission license number DC-32. Establishment of a plan may adversely affect the individual's credit rating or credit scores. Non-payment of debt may lead creditors to increase financial charges or collections activity, including litigation.
Biz Talk Radio.
Okay. We're back with President Carter's chief White House domestic advisor, Stu Eisenstadt. You wanted to finish up on those thoughts, Stu?
Knowing what Volcker was going to do in the political as well as economic pain, he never once complained, and Volcker credits him for letting him do his job of squeezing inflation out of the system the hard way. It didn't help us for our reelection because inflation didn't go down quickly enough. It helped Ronald Reagan in his first 2 years when it did, and helped the country ever since. Volcker deserves the credit for doing it. Carter deserves the credit for appointing him and letting him do his job. And in the meantime, Jim, since this is, of course, a business talk radio, we also created 10 million jobs in that four-year period. That's more than any president in a four-year period until Bill Clinton's term and his first 4 years in office.
And I'll say in this book, you'll notice that a lot of decisions President Carter made were long-term in nature. He took a short-term hit and really is sort of an anti-politician, lived through to that. But I do want to talk about a couple challenges now before we get to his legacy. Ran as a populist outsider. Ham Jordan said, if you point Vance and Brzezinski, it's a failed deal before we start. Did he govern to status quo? And the second point is, I've interviewed Chris Whipple several times, who's now the expert on chief of staffs, and he says the chief of staff determines the success of a presidency. Reagan got that with Jim Baker. Carter appeared not to get that.
We had a dilemma. He had run, in a way, like Donald Trump, as an outsider, Annie Washington. This was in the immediate post-Watergate era. I'll never lie to you. And the dilemma all along when he was actually elected and in the Oval Office is, how do you keep that outsider status when you have to govern inside? It's a dilemma we never quite squared. And I think it was complicated by the fact that he brought into the White House his Georgia mafia, many of whom were talented, but he didn't leaven it with experienced Washington people who could help him navigate the treacherous landmines in Washington. And another mistake he made, over my objection, was he decided to be his own chief of staff for the first 2 years. He drew the wrong lesson, I think, from the Nixon era. Yes, Haldeman, who was the chief of staff, blocked Nixon off from all the people who should have been advising him. He was ruthless. But the problem was Haldeman's and his personality. It was not the chief of staff. You need to have a chief of staff to set priorities, to make sure that he's on the right course. And that didn't happen until halfway into the administration when he appointed Ham Jordan, and then Ham was diverted by a false charge of snorting cocaine. So we really never had a full-time chief of staff until the very last year of the administration with Jack Watson.
And I'll say Chris Whipple thinks Jack Watson would have been great all 4 years. I want to talk now about what I call a little bit failed fusion of opposites, and I'll give you what I'm talking about. Vice President was Mondale, fundamentally much more liberal than Carter. Foreign policy, Vance, Brzezinski, completely different views. You say they're both good, but not together. And, of course, then you have the new Democrat thing. He was focused on balancing budget inflation versus what liberal Democratic spending would have called for. Were those failed opposites that he put together?
Well, first of all, Mondale was appointed as vice president because he was more liberal, because he had ties to the labor movement that Carter, as a Southern governor, did not, that he had ties to the liberal establishment, that he was an insider. He had been senator for several terms. And it was a good balance. I think that Mondale understood that Carter was more conservative. He understood he was not elected in 1976 against Ford to create a new great society. And what we often did is at the end of a budget cycle, Jim, Mondale and I would go into the private residence, and we would ask Carter to add back about $1 billion to the budget to deal with Head Start and programs that would help liberals. But they really, I think, were a very good match. Now, at the end, Mondale almost resigned over the malaise speech, and we can talk about that. The Vance-Brzezinski problem was more fundamental because they had opposite views of the key issue facing Carter, and that is the Soviet Union. Cy Vance was a diplomat, a very good one, but his notion was managing the Soviet Union. Zbigniew, who was Polish-born and academic, was a much more hardline person. And I told Carter during the transition, after we won in 76 and during a break in one of the first CIA briefings, I was the only staff person to attend, and he told me, Jim, he said, I'm thinking of appointing Cy as Secretary of State and Zbigniew as National Security Advisor. What do you think? And I had worked, of course, with both of them as policy director during a campaign. I said, look, either one, Jim, would be great, but not together. Yeah. And he said, why? And I said, because they have fundamental differences on the fundamental issue that's going to face you in foreign policy, which is the Soviet Union. He said, I can take care of it. I like different views. Well, it really created a dissonance in our foreign policy, looking one way and the other, often stitching together their views. It was not until the Afghan invasion, Christmas of 1979 by the Soviet Union, that he clearly went into Zbigniew's hardline view, and even his conservative critics state that he did courageous things after the Afghan invasion. We armed the Mujahideen. Reagan continued that. We created the Carter Doctrine, saying that any further entrance into the Persian Gulf would be met with military force. We had the grain embargo only 3 weeks before the Iowa primary. We had the Olympic boycott, remembering the lessons of the 1936 Olympics. And
up the defense budget, too.
Yes. But he also set in place all the weapon systems that Reagan then built on, the intermediate nuclear forces in Europe, the MX mobile missile, the stealth bomber. He increased defense spending 3%, and after the Afghan invasion, 5%, and got our NATO allies to do the same. So many of the defense foundations that Reagan put in place were built on what we started, particularly after the Afghan invasion, and that's when, again, this split between Vance and Carter ended. I've always felt, and I interviewed Vance, he resigned after the failed hostage rescue.
Right.
But I'm convinced, Jim, that the real reason he did was he realized that his more dovish policy toward the Soviet Union had now fallen out of favor with the president.
All right, we're down to a couple minutes here. I want to start with his legacy stuff. And obviously, the biggest one, Camp David. I didn't realize how every one of his advisors was against it. Talk about Camp David, the big points.
So in foreign policy, he did a great many things. We normalized relations with China. We put human rights at the center of foreign policy. But clearly, his most important and lasting accomplishment was the Camp David Accords and then the Egypt-Israel peace treaty, which followed. And it's a great example of symmetry and how it should be done. He studied CIA reports endlessly about the two. What were their red lines? What could they accept and what couldn't they? And then during 13 agonizing days and nights, he, Carter, drafted 20 different peace agreements. He negotiated separately with Begin and Sadat, because they were like two scorpions in a bottle. They couldn't negotiate with each other. He took them to Gettysburg on the first Sunday of the 13 days to underscore that five wars were enough. And then, Jim, at the very end, after all these 20 drafts, 13 agonizing days and nights, we were close but not quite there, and Prime Minister Begin said, Mr. President, I can't go any further. I can't make any concessions. I'm not bluffing. Carter, realizing this would destroy his initiative, and knew that Begin had a great love for his grandchildren. He got photographs of himself, Begin, and Sadat at Camp David, wrote each of the eight grandchildren's names on the photo, walked them over to Begin's cabin, handed it to him, and then watched Begin read each of their names. his eyes tearing, his lips quivering. He put his bags down and he said, "Mr. President, I'll make one last try. The rest is history, Jim. 40 years, never a violation. They're now allies against Iran. It's one of the great lasting achievements of Jimmy Carter's presidency, and it's symmetry at its best. Real preparation, understanding people, knowing the issues well enough to draft the agreements yourself, being a great personal negotiator."
More legacy highlights coming right up.
Have you written a book and want to get it published? Then call Page Publishing at 800-557-6095 immediately. That's 800-557-6095. Page Publishing is looking for authors of all types of books. And unlike most publishers, Page Publishing will take the time to review each and every book submitted to them and give you their feedback. If they like what they read, they'll get your book into bookstores and for sale online at Amazon, the Apple iTunes Store, Barnes & Noble, and other outlets. They handle everything: editing, cover design, copyright protection, printing, publicity, and distribution. So if you've written a novel, children's book, cookbook, inspirational work, poetry, or a biography and want to get it published, then you need to call Page Publishing and do it immediately. Call 800-557-6095 now for your free author submission kit. Again, for your free author submission kit, call 800-557-6095. That's 800-557-6095. Your road to fame and fortune could very well start with this simple phone call. Call Page Publishing at 800-557-6095 for your free author submission kit.
If you're over the age of 50 and considering buying an annuity in the next 60 days, I have some important news for you. Don't buy an annuity until you understand the pros and cons of annuities. A free book to help you maximize your retirement income from television host and three-time author Josh Melberg has been released. This book reveals little-known truths about annuity strategies in simple-to-understand terms. Grab a pen right now, because we are about to offer you this free book that unlocks the five little-known secrets we believe baby boomers and seniors should know before buying an annuity. Call 800-935-0752 now, and you'll receive a free copy of Josh Melberg's book, Next Gen Annuity Strategies Revealed. As a bonus, we'll also send you a copy of The Number One Mistakes Retirees Are Making With Their Investments Today, and a free DVD on how you can get up to 33% more income in retirement. Call 800-935-0752. That's 800-935-0752. Employees of J.D. Melberg Financial have the appropriate licenses for the products they offer.
I live alone and rarely have visitors. So when I slipped and fell in the kitchen last month and couldn't get to a phone, I knew I was in trouble.
Help!
I could barely move.
Help!
I tried calling for help, but no one could hear me. As I lay there, I couldn't help but think of my kids and grandkids having to go on without me. I was terrified. It took 8 hours for my neighbor to find me. It could have been the end of me. That's when I knew I needed Life Alert. With just one press of this button, I'm connected to the Life Alert Center, where I can get the help I need, even when I cannot reach a phone. With Life Alert, I'm never alone.
Call 1-800-414-1958 for your free Life Alert brochure. That's 1-800-414-1958. 1-800-414-1958. Call for your free Life Alert brochure today at 1-800-414-1958.
If your credit card bills have gotten out of hand, call Consolidated Credit now. If you're making the minimum payments, but your balance is just not going down, call Consolidated Credit now. If the interest rates on your credit cards are so high, it will take years to get out of debt, call Consolidated Credit now. They've helped over 5 million people. They can consolidate your debts into one lower payment, reduce your interest rates, and get you out of debt fast. If you're struggling with credit card debt, call Consolidated Credit now.
Call now, 800-350-3241. That's 800-350-3241. 800-350-3241.
Consolidated Credit Counseling Services Incorporated, 5701 West Sunrise Boulevard, Fort Lauderdale, Florida, 33313. Not a loan company, licensed by the New York Department of Financial Services and by the Vermont Department of Financial Regulation. Maryland DM-19, Oregon DM-80031. Licensed by Virginia State Corporation. Commission license number DC-32. Establishment of a plan may adversely affect the individual's credit rating or credit scores. Non-payment of debt may lead creditors to increase financial charges or collections activity, including litigation.
Due to an upturn in the economy, Main Street Business Loans has pre-approved the release of millions of dollars in small business funding. Your business may already be pre-approved to receive up to $250,000. We've sent out millions of pre-approval letters. We see the economy growing, and our underwriters believe now is the time to invest in your business so you can grow faster and make more money. and we're prepared to give you up to $250,000 to do it. Your funds can be available in 5 days. There are no application fees, no annual fees, just quick access to up to $250,000. If your business did not receive your approval letter to get up to $250,000, call Main Street Business Loans Approval Desk now.
800-430-7570. 800-430-7570. 800-430-7570. That's 800-430-7570.
Biz Talk Radio.
We're back with Stu Eisenstadt. He's the author of President Carter, The White House Years, an epic document reassessing the presidency of Jimmy Carter. One more thing on the Middle East peace accomplishment. It's been 40 years with no violations. Why has no other president had any success with expanding the peace?
And I think the reason explains much about the way Carter approached the presidency. He was a ferocious campaigner, but he believed in parking politics at the Oval Office door and then taking on Panama and the Middle East and energy when they were politically unpopular. So he cracked a lot of eggs to reach this agreement. Other presidents have not been willing to do so. One of the lost things in our peace treaty with Egypt was, quote-unquote, full autonomy for the Palestinians. I'm convinced had Carter been reelected, he would have put enough pressure on all parties to achieve that autonomy. Future presidents simply weren't willing to risk the political problems of pushing for the Palestinians. Carter did, and I think, unfortunately, that full autonomy has never been fully achieved.
Stu, we talked about the hands-on nature of this. He even negotiated directly with people below the top levels in government. If I turn to the Iran hostage situation, did that level of control end up hurting him? He personalized the crisis, almost held himself hostage himself.
Yes. I'm very frank in the book about a number of things, and in particular Iran. This was the coup de grace to the whole Carter presidency. Now, I don't think it's fair to blame Carter for the Iranian Islamic Revolution any more than it would be to blame President Eisenhower for the communist revolution by Castro, but I believe it was the single worst intelligence disaster in modern times, at least until the weapons of mass destruction in Iraq, and maybe more so. The CIA, Jim, did not tell the president that the Shah of Iran, our great ally upon whom we had six presidents given tens of billions of dollars of aid, did not realize his political support rested on quicksand. They didn't realize, remarkably, this was our principal ally, that he was getting for 5 years cancer treatments. It was a horrible problem. And then once the hostage crisis occurred, both Brzezinski, the former National Security Advisor, and myself said, take immediate military action. That didn't mean bombing Tehran. What we argued for was mining the harbors, prevent oil from coming out, to choke their economy, to show that we mean business. Instead, he met with the hostage families and said, my number one priority was getting your loved ones out safe and sound, which he did, but at huge political cost. He holed himself up in the White House to show he was working full-time on this, canceled all his trips, didn't campaign against Kennedy, made no foreign trips, and this really backfired. As you said very well, Jim, it made him the hostage. It gave the Iranians more leverage. If you're a member of the press, it created Ted Koppel's Nightline program, Walter Cronkite,
yes,
and the deep American reporting every single night would end his broadcast, date 103, date 206, date 308 of the hostage crisis. And then the failed rescue effort did not fail because of too few helicopters. Indeed, Carter added more than the military wanted. It failed, Jim, because there had been no joint command at that time. We had four military services who were not used to working together. And when one of the helicopter rotors hit the C-130 cargo plane and caused the death of eight people in flames, our administration went up in flames metaphorically as well.
And the JSOC now exists. I've interviewed McRaven and McChrystal. That's the Joint Special Ops Inter-Service.
Yes, and we created that joint.
I was going to say, yeah. Now, let me ask you briefly, the malaise speech, in which he never used that word, actually did bump the administration up, but then seemed to collapse when he fired all the wrong people. And, of course, you have your huge Mondale revelation in there.
Yes, so Carter, in effect, our energy security depends on him. He was a great consumer champion. He was the greatest environmental president since the TR put ethics in. But even with that, his popularity was declining because of the inflation problems and high unemployment and gas lines. So he came back from the G7 summit in Tokyo, canceled the energy speech we had written for him, went to Camp David, met for 10 days with the so-called best and brightest to try to write his presidency, and then came up with a speech which was called the Crisis of Confidence speech. It caused huge problems. Mondale and I strongly urged him not to do so. But it turned out that the Crisis of Confidence speech, which he did not use the term malaise, the press later called it, it was actually an upbeat speech about how we could restore confidence in our institutions. It was hugely successful, Jim. Mm-hmm. His polls went up 17% in one day. An older lady in the mailroom who had worked since President Roosevelt's time said she had never seen such an outpouring of positive mail. And then what happened? He surprisingly, and while telling Mondale, which is why Mondale almost resigned, he decided to ask for the resignations of the entire cabinet to show he was in charge, and then fired a couple. He could have easily fired a couple rather than doing that, and all the momentum we got from that speech was evaporated, and that older lady said all the mail stopped. It was really tragic because we had really begun to restore the trust and confidence that we had lost.
All right, let's do some of these legacy highlights so you can give brief responses. Energy.
Jim, you talked about long-term implications. The energy security we feel today, the lack of dependence on OPEC oil, is due to the three major energy bills we passed. He deregulated the price of oil and gas, encouraging domestic production. We're now exporting that. He put conservation at the center of our consciousness, and he inaugurated the new alternative energy revolution with solar and wind, put even a solar panel on the White House. He was a great environmental president. He doubled the size of the national park system with the Alaska Lands Bill over the fierce opposition of the Alaska delegation. And again, he was a different kind of Democrat. He was a consumer champion who transformed over-regulated systems, for example, trucks, railroad, and airlines. Our air travel today, which is open to the Southwest and JetBlue, and competition, came because of our deregulation. We deregulated telecommunications and inaugurated the cable era. And those of your listeners who love local craft beers, we ended a prohibition regulation against competition from local craft beers. He put ethics and government reform at the center after Watergate, and those ethics reforms are still critical. The Ethics Act of 78, Inspectors General, and where did the independent counsel come from that is now front page news? It came from us. Where did the inspector generals come when the inspector general just issued a major report, old Hillary Clinton Russia issues? Foreign Corrupt Practice Act, merit selection of judges.
Civil service reform, by the way, which isn't sexy, but...
Civil service reform, more women and minorities appointed, and we saved, you're in Greenwich, but a lot of your listeners are in New York City, we saved New York City from total bankruptcy.
And Chrysler.
It would be the city it is today without it. And he created the modern vice presidency with Mondale, and that's only on domestic affairs.
Human rights.
Camp David, human rights, a tough position on the Soviet Union, both with soft power with human rights and hard power with building up our military, normalizing relations with China, the tough position on Afghanistan. All of these are legacy issues. And one very cute story is, that Nixon and Kissinger get all the credit they deserve for reaching out to China, the One China policy, but they didn't establish diplomatic relations, Jim, because they didn't want to take on the Taiwan lobby, which was a key part of the Republican coalition. We did. We won. And when Deng Xiaoping came to the White House, I was in the cabinet room, he said to the president, I appreciate what you've done on diplomatic relations. What I want is the lowest tariff levels for our products, sound familiar, that you give to your most favorite nation. She said, I know that the Soviet Union doesn't get that because they restrict immigration. We don't. He took a pencil and a piece of paper, he pushed it over to the president and said, you put on this piece of paper how many Chinese you'd like us to send you each year to show we have no limits on immigration. 1 million? 10 million? Carter laughed and said, I'll tell you what, I'll take 10 million Chinese a year if you'll take 10,000 American journalists a year. Had to fulfill that.
Hey, Steve, let me ask you this, because I didn't really know this. Carter really came somewhat close to health care, and it would have been no more than $1,250 cost per family, but Ted Kennedy really was responsible for it not happening.
Exactly. I mean, we lost the election in the end to Reagan because of Iran and inflation, but also because the Democratic Party was split when Ted Kennedy decided to run. And this is a tragedy. In terms of health care, we had proposed a first-phase bill, Jim, which would have covered catastrophic coverage for everybody for huge expenses. It would have expanded Medicaid dramatically. and it would have covered every child under 6 years old. It was a $17 billion first phase program in 1980. Ted Kennedy said it wasn't enough. He wanted cradle-to-grave, government-run health insurance, and it divided the party, and it prevented health care reform all the way up to President Obama. It would have been a major, major step forward. And it showed, in a sense, the problem that Carter had. He was a centrist. He believed in deregulating. But at the same time, he was sort of the first new Democrat, fiscal prudence, but dealing with poverty, dealing with discrimination. And being a centrist, he got hit from both sides. He was too liberal for the conservatives, too conservative for the liberals. And so Ted Kennedy took him on, never got that health insurance program cradle to grave that he wanted. And ours went down in flames because Kennedy didn't support it. At a time, we had a very substantial majority of Democrats in both the Senate and House. A real tragedy for the American public, but it said something about Carter as well. He was a centrist. He believed in taking some things from Republicans, some things from Democrats, and many of the great accomplishments, Jim, that we made, like the Panama Canal Treaty, which transformed our relationship with Latin America, as did our human rights policy to it. It occurred because of bipartisanship. Howard Baker, the Republican party leader, supported it.
And we're looking back at the Carter presidency, one final segment.
We paid less for our Craftmatic today than we did 20 years ago.
If you're still searching for the perfect solution to a good night's sleep, call now for prices and free information on today's Craftmatic adjustable beds. And then decide when you see how little they cost. Rated number one by consumers nationwide on ConsumerAffairs.com. Craftmatic beds come in all mattress types, including cool gel memory foam, for up to 50% less than today's leading memory foam brand. Enjoy temporary relief of low back pain, poor circulation, nighttime heartburn, mild arthritis. You'll sleep better in a Craftmatic adjustable bed. So if you're still searching for the perfect solution to a good night's sleep, call now for prices and information, and then decide when you see how little they cost. Discover Craftmatic for less, up to 50% less than today's leading memory foam brand.
Call 1-800-316-5271. That's 1-800-316-5271. 1-800-316-5271. Call now.
If you're over the age of 50 and considering buying an annuity in the next 60 days, I have some important news for you. Don't buy an annuity until you understand the pros and cons of annuities. A free book to help you maximize your retirement income from television host and three-time author Josh Melberg has been released. This book reveals little-known truths about annuity strategies in simple-to-understand terms. Grab a pen right now, because we are about to offer you this free book that unlocks the five little-known secrets we believe baby boomers and seniors should know before buying an annuity. Call 800-935-0752 now, and you'll receive a free copy of Josh Melberg's book, Next Gen Annuity Strategies Revealed. As a bonus, we'll also send you a copy of The Number One Mistakes Retirees Are Making With Their Investments Today, and a free DVD on how you can get up to 33% more income in retirement. Call 800-935-0752. That's 800-935-0752. Employees of J.D. Melberg Financial have the appropriate licenses for the products they offer.
Do you have an idea for an invention or new product? Do you think companies would be interested in your idea? Do you want to try to get a patent? Then call InventHelp now. InventHelp keeps your idea confidential and explains every step of the invention process. We create professional materials representing your idea and submit it to companies who are looking for new ideas. We have more than 9,000 companies who have agreed to review ideas in confidence. If a company shows interest in manufacturing your invention, we can negotiate on your behalf. We have helped over 10,000 clients receive patents. We also offer services including 3D modeling and animation demonstrating your idea, prototyping services, and we use state-of-the-art technology to show InventHelp client ideas to additional companies. Join the thousands of people just like you who chose InventHelp to pursue their idea. We are experienced. We are working for you. We are InventHelp.
Call us for free information at 1-800-607-8945. That's 1-800-607-8945. Again, 1-800-607-8945.
If your credit card bills have gotten out of hand, call Consolidated Credit now. If you're making the minimum payments, but your balance is just not going down, call Consolidated Credit now. If the interest rates on your credit cards are so high, it will take years to get out of debt. Call Consolidated Credit now. They've helped over 5 million people. They can consolidate your debts into one lower payment, reduce your interest rates, and get you out of debt fast. If you're struggling with credit card debt, call Consolidated Credit now.
Call now, 800-350-3241. That's 800-350-3241. 800-350-3241.
Consolidated Credit Counseling Services Incorporated, 5701 West Sunrise Boulevard, Fort Lauderdale, Florida, 33313. Not a loan company licensed by the New York Department of Financial Services and by the Vermont Department of Financial Regulation. Maryland DM-19, Oregon DM-80031. Licensed by Virginia State Corporation. Commission license number DC-32. Establishment of a plan may adversely affect the individual's credit rating or credit scores. Non-payment of debt may lead creditors to increase financial charges or collections activity, including litigation.
This alert just came in. This special announcement is for business owners and leaders of organizations who've been waiting for the right time to build. General Steel has made it impossible to wait any longer with rock-bottom prices that could save you thousands. That's right. General Steel, America's leader in pre-engineered structures, is offering buildings at prices you will never see again. Don't miss these prices. A 50 by 100 for under $30,000. You heard right. That's 5,000 square feet under $30,000. Manufacturers, if you need a larger building, try a 100 by 100 commercial building for $129,000. You can't afford to rent with these prices. Imagine a 70 by 100 foot church building for under $69,000. With the economy improving and interest rates still at historic lows, you can't afford to wait.
Call 800-605-5370. 800-605-5370. Call 800-605-5370.
Biz Talk Radio.
Chief White House Domestic Advisor under President Carter, Stu Eisenstadt. Stu, you had Iran, the misery index, Ted Kennedy running, the Cuban boat lift, debate gate. Is there any way that Carter could have been reelected?
With all of that, because of the other accomplishments we had in energy and environment and so forth, we actually went into the last 10 days, Jim.
That's right.
Dead even with Ronald Reagan. The key factors were the following. The debate only 8 days before the election. Reagan was a great debater, and as I show in the book, and as Jim Baker, his campaign manager, confirmed in one of my 350 interviews, they had stolen our debate book that I'd developed. They knew all of our attack lines. Now, that's not the only reason Reagan won the debate. He was a superior debater.
Mm-hmm.
But it really hurt us. And so we lost a tremendous amount of momentum, and then Iran came back to bite us. In the last weekend, we had regained a lot of what we lost from the debate. We were even, some polls showed us ahead. It was the last offer that Iran made for the hostage crisis when we were in Chicago campaigning. At 3 o'clock in the morning, we went back to the White House. I begged him not to go back. I said, just look at the offer. It's not adequate. He said, no, I'm going to do everything possible. He went back to the White House. It revived the whole hostage crisis issue, and then our polls just dropped like a rock. So I think it still would have been possible. But again, the twin burdens, Jim, of double-digit inflation and Iran were really almost too much for anybody to bear. We simply couldn't do it, and particularly with a divided party, with the Ted Kennedy primary challenge.
So it's hard to see. It's hard to see in today's world too that somebody sacrificing and doing the right thing for the short term and sacrificing their presidency. Let me ask you this: where do you rank Carter quickly versus why not the best, which is his standard, and versus one-term presidents and then all?
Well, you know, the American people, and I suppose rightly so, love winners. When you win an election, you're viewed as positive regardless of what you've done. When you lose, you're judged a failure. I think he should go down. And I don't nominate him for a place on Mount Rushmore.
Yes.
But I do think he belongs in the foothills with many other presidents who made major contributions, despite the problems we had, major contributions that I've mentioned today in energy and environment and ethics and appointing women and breaking the back of inflation by having Volcker and human rights and Camp David and China normalization and military buildup. All of these things I think should put him in a quadrant with being a very, very accomplished one-term president, and being equal to many two-term presidents. So was he a great president? No. Was he a good and accomplished president? Yes.
Okay. Two what-ifs. What would have been different if Burt Lance had stayed? And number two, what would he have accomplished in the second term that was big in your mind that would have been on the agenda?
Burt Lance was his top advisor in Georgia. He was a great politician. He was appointed as the head of the Office of Management and Budget. But he was also his link to the sort of Southern conservative base. He was his age. We were all 20 years younger. He could say to the president, You have no clothes. This is what you have to do. When we lost him, it was a great loss. He hung on to Burt too long because of the banking scandal, but losing him was an enormous loss because he lost a peer who could really tell him what needed to be said and in blunt terms. So it was an enormous loss to us, and I think he never fully recovered from it.
Second term?
If there had been a second term, I think his priorities would have been to implement the Strategic Arms Nuclear Agreement. It would have been to fulfill the full autonomy for the Palestinians, and he would have been a beneficiary of the lower inflation. I'm also convinced that with that lower inflation that Volcker did bring to Reagan in the first 2 years, it would have cleared the air and we could have gotten that first phase health insurance program passed, which would have put us in a much better light.
So some big stuff, in other words. Let me ask you this. He ran as a populist, probably the first anti-Washington guy. Is Trump the natural outgrowth of this?
No, I think they both certainly ran as anti-Washington, but they had very different impressions. I mean, Carter's notion was, yes, Watergate was a problem. We had to bring ethics to the White House to let people decide whether Trump has done that or not. But what Carter wanted to do is make government work better, not destroy it. He wanted to bring us together. He appealed to our better angels, appointing women and blacks and being inclusive, not trying to divide it, not stoking grievances, not trying to upend the environment. So he wanted to make government more efficient, more deregulated, more consumer-oriented. He wanted to make it better, but he didn't want to destroy it. He wanted to make it ethical. He wanted to make it transparent. He wanted to put human rights at the centerpiece of our foreign policy so our foreign policy reflected the best American values. He wanted to reach out to allies. We had great relations with Europe. The G7 summits were real productive. So we tried to rally and did our natural allies in Europe and Japan and Canada against the Soviet Union. We didn't try to attack them and divide them.
Okay.
So I think we're very different, although they both ran against Washington.
Okay, we'll do these last couple of things briefly. The impact of Rosalynn Carter, and I was impressed you say that she suggested Reuben Askew, chief of staff, so she got the chief of staff issue.
Rosalynn was a beautiful thing to watch. She was, in the early campaigning for governor, so shy, Jim, she hardly could speak. She hated public speaking.
Yeah.
She blossomed as first lady. She became only the second first lady next to Eleanor Roosevelt to testify in Congress. She developed her own mental health, community mental health bill, and got it passed. She was his envoy to Latin America, gave him the tough medicine about human rights, and, yes, had great political instincts. She wanted Reuben Askew, who was the governor of Florida, to be the chief of staff. She realized he needed one. She told him things like, Jimmy, don't put in your first term Panama Canal. It's too controversial.
Yeah.
Wait till a second term. He would say, well, maybe there won't be a second term. She had great political instincts and really blossomed as a wonderful first lady. A very significant one, and by the way, the only one to sit in on cabinet meetings.
Yeah.
She wanted to know what was happening. She wanted to be informed. And when he holed himself up after the hostage crisis and didn't campaign, all the burden of campaigning in the Democratic primaries against Ted Kennedy rested on her. She had a great sense of what the public was thinking and conveyed it back to him. He would have done better to listen to her more often.
Okay, if we finish up here, is a fundamental issue that he basically lacked a political personality. He just didn't fit in the D.C. whole deal and didn't like politics. And can a good man be a good president?
It's a great question. And ironically, again, we got almost 70% of our legislation passed because he met frequently with the Democratic leadership. What he didn't do is he didn't schmooze like Bill Clinton. He wasn't willing to trade off highways and so forth for votes. He said, this is the right thing to do and follow it. In many cases, it worked. But he forgot that a president is not only commander-in-chief, he has to be politician-in-chief. He has to nurture his base. This is certainly one thing Trump does well. He has to keep that base with him the entire time and not simply do the right thing, quote-unquote, and then hope at the end you'll be rewarded.
I have to say, a good way to end this is I love what Vice President Mondale said at the end of the administration. We told the truth. We obeyed the law. We kept the peace. Thanks to Stu Eisenstadt, people should take a look at President Carter. The White House years are quite a reassessment. Next, we have Robert F. Kennedy Jr. on lessons he learned from his family. Thanks to Stu Eisenstadt. Thanks to our national audience for listening. See everybody next Sunday on Business Talk with Jim Campbell.
Thank you, Jim.
Thank you, Stu.
The opinions you hear on Biz Talk Radio are those of the hosts, callers, and guests, and do not necessarily reflect those of this station, Biz Talk Radio, its management, or advertisers. The information on Biz Talk Radio does not constitute a recommendation, offer, or solicitation to buy or sell any product or securities. Please consult a professional before investing. If you have any questions about Biz Talk Radio, contact us at 817-274-1609 or at biztalkradio.com.
Biz Talk Radio.